I'll be right back. Go ahead.
There you are. Hey, open up the House Committee on Education for February 19th. Welcome for Friday. Today we've got two pieces of business to talk about, and we'll do that, and then we'll have an informational hearing on STEM. So with that, I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1566. We have Morgan Allen. Richard, if you could explain what it is.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1566 extends for 2 years the sunset on provisions that allow students whose legal residence is not within school district boundaries to attend a school in that district as if they were a resident if they receive written consent, commonly called open enrollment. The committee has been asked to consider -A8 amendments, and they are conflict amendments. They don't have any substantive value. They're just to make sure the statutory construction lines up.
Okay, and this was what Representative Pierce talked about last week?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Morgan Allen on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association. And unfortunately, Senator Roblin is planning on being here, but he is stuck on the floor. They are in a 50-page readathon.
Will not
be able to join you.
They must be doing marijuana today.
You get the B team today, Madam Chair.
Oh, no.
But I want to talk a little bit about Senate Bill 1566. And I know most of the members of the committee are familiar that open enrollment was part of the large education package that passed in the 2011 legislative session. And I know Representative Parrish acknowledged this when she talked about it last week. This issue has become somewhat politicized, and I think there's a lot of questions that we still need to work through around equity and access and who's able to participate in our transfer system. But with this bill, we're trying to address something I think a little bit different. The bill extends the sunset on open enrollment 2 additional years, and the reason we're doing that is, and really what I want to focus on today is, we now have an overly complicated transfer system in Oregon. We have two main systems of student transfers, if you will. We have interdistrict transfer, which has been around since time immemorial, and we have open enrollment, which has been around since 2011. And both of those systems have different rules, different calendars, different procedures. Districts can do one or both or neither. And so you can imagine that this has become an issue that's very confusing for district staff, administrators, school secretaries, other folks when they're trying to explain the two different systems to parents. So if it's confusing for our education professionals, it's obviously confusing for parents and students. And just a reminder, Madam Chair, since open enrollment passed in 2011, the legislature has subsequently passed bills in 2013, 2014, 2015, and now hopefully 2016 to address what I would say are the sort of the unintended consequences of having two different transfer systems. If you remember, the first big issue on open enrollment was the marketing and sort of direct mail issue where school districts are recruiting kids to come from neighboring districts and the legislature putting into the use of your state school fund dollars to do that in one of the first bills, and then we've had other bills around interdistrict transfers to try to deal with gaps in the systems where kids move during the summer or, you know, mom or dad loses a job and they've missed the transfer window. We've subsequently passed legislation to let kids finish out the school year. If they move over the summer and miss the transfer window, they can stay. And last session over on the Senate side, we actually, in my opinion, came pretty close to coming up with a proposal for one single unified transfer system in the state. We're not quite there yet. I talked to both people that are not huge fans of open enrollment and people that are strong supporters of open enrollment. And in my opinion, I think we're real close. I know Chair Doherty and Chair Roblin have sort of agreed to help bring some people together in the interim and try to come back in the 2017 session and see if we can come up with a system that we can all sort of agree to have going forward only one system. The reason OSBA asked for only a 2-year extension on the sunset, there were discussions about 5 years or just taking it off completely. In our opinion, without deadlines in this building, nothing ever gets done. So if we said, we'll just remove the sunset or we do 5 years, sort of the urgency to have that conversation and bring people on both sides of the issue together and try to hammer out an agreement, we thought was lost. So that's why we were supportive of the 2-year extension. I think ultimately we need to get to a transfer system that's as fair and equitable for all the students and families in Oregon as possible. And what I always try to tell people is a lot of times when we're talking about transfers, we tend to talk about the kids that want to transfer and how it can impact and improve their situation. Part of the conversation also needs to be about about how it impacts schools or districts when students leave, for the students that remain in those schools. So I think we can find some balance. I think there's general agreement on many of the issues that need to be worked out, but I think we need some more time. And again, we believe that two-year timeline forces some urgency, and with the leadership of the two education committee chairs, I think we can get something done, hopefully for the 2017 session.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am concerned as well that if we don't explicitly ask for certain things to be looked at, they are not looked at. I've had that kind of experience as well. I am concerned about the transfer and how it affects both the school that students are leaving and the students who are in the other school. I am concerned about both economic, racial, ethnic efforts, geographic things that take place, zone, area code, that kind of thing. I'm just curious about that. So zip code. I just want to make sure that we are, in fact, starting to look at those issues, because this has the potential of creating some significant problems. And given the kind of demographic changes we're seeing in the state, I've already seen some evidence of some concerns, unfortunately, being validated.
And Representative Frederick, I think it's a good point. I think just sort of thinking back to the various bills that I mentioned over the last couple sessions, I think we've sort of seen some of those things and tried to acknowledge them. The marketing, for example, it's not appropriate for state or local property tax dollars to be used to market, and so the legislature ended that. Originally, in the open enrollment, you could sort of pick and choose the areas where you would enroll kids from. We changed that, so you can't, you know, sort of say, well, we'll take kids from this district but not that district. And I think, again, there's general agreement on some of the big ticket items, like it has to be non-discriminatory. It has to be fair to everyone. Everybody has to have an equal shot, whether you can throw a football really well or not. You need to have an equal shot for those slots. And so I think we've addressed some of that. But the point you raise about, equity is a buzzword. Mm-hmm. That gets thrown around a lot. And I think that is something we need to seriously look at. And I think Representative Parrish talked about that in her own experience in her districts, where there were students of color leaving a school in Tigard in Representative Doherty's district and going into Representative Parrish's district. So I think those are issues that I know at least this chair and I think Senator Robin would like to discuss as we go forward.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative McClain.
I really support this bill to have that two-year discussion, and I agree with you. I think having a shorter deadline is a really good idea. I just wanted to put out there, because I haven't been able to sit in on any committees where this has been discussed, but some of the superintendents that I talked to, at least three, talked about it just being, pretty much a logistical nightmare for both the parents and people who are trying to administer it. So I'm hoping that the streamlining that you're talking about, rather than two systems, one, even the dates were ridiculous, where the dates were different. And so parents on one end trying to get into one district and the date on the other end, well, they couldn't even talk about it because their date was already gone by and the other one wasn't, and they didn't know about it. And so, I mean, there are a lot of things simple like dates. Also, on your marketing issue, there's still people out there marketing. And so if there's something that you put in a year or two ago, then I'd like to see a copy of that, because I can probably, bring in some, and I want to know if it meets the test.
Yeah, Representative McClain, that's a good point. One of the issues that we discovered when we talked about the marketing issue is certainly the legislature can put a prohibition on the use of state school fund dollars to do that marketing. But if a school district wants to use locally raised money, the Booster Club or the PTA or somebody wants to use money to create brochures or do mailings, there's nothing we can do to stop that. And so that's kind of a free speech issue. That was one of the things that came up. But the other one was the school buses. If you remember, initially we heard stories, I know Representative Springer remembers this, of people, driving their buses great distances into other people's school districts to pick up kids, and sort of the tension that created. So we tried to do some things about that too, that basically said, if you're going to do that, if you're going to be driving your buses in neighboring districts, you pay for that yourself. The state's not going to reimburse you for those miles you're traveling in somebody else's school district. That's not fair. That's not what the intention was, and it's a little bit more complicated than that, but I think those are the things that we can try to address. But again, in our opinion, I think the idea of having one system where everybody's playing by the same rules, everybody understands the timelines and the forms and the applications, and I know many of you are former school board members, some of you currently work in school districts or are board chairs. I mean, you've probably heard this from your people. It has become, I think, more complicated. Well-intentioned as it may be, it has become more complicated than it needs to be.
Okay, thank you, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just one more thing on the advertising piece, because that's been a huge conversation, and it isn't just what we think it is on the surface. And so foundation dollars or whatever can be used. But the challenge that comes up in the conversation of advertising is when the Booster Club advertises games and events, well, now, is what's the purpose of that? And so it's not as clear-cut as, oh, they're advertising for students or they're advertising for their existing sports program, which happens to be a little bit better than this existing sports program over here. And so that's why it just seems impossible to prohibit that. I don't know that we want to do that, frankly.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, one thing. Do I have to gavel up before we talk about that or the amendments?
No, we can talk about that.
Okay. One thing that was in this was an addition of Dash 8 amendments, and Richard talked to them about kind of fix it. So if you could briefly go over what the amendments are, because I think we're going to move this bill today. So if you can talk about the amendments, so at least you all know what they are.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The amendments are Dash 8 amendments. The committee just received them. They're conflict amendments. So because House Bill 4023, the Beaverton-Hillsborough Associated Enrollment Bill passed,
yeah.
That shuffled around some statutes. Okay. Mm. This bill, unamended, which would conflict, and so the amendments make sure that all law stays law, stays where it should be, written down, things like that.
So that really was a conflict.
Not substantive, moves just statutory construction.
Okay. Yeah. So Beaverton and Hillsborough caused conflict, and we had to resolve that.
That's right, Madam Chair. Yes.
Thank you. Okay, any other questions? Okay, any other questions of Morgan? Okay, thank you very much. Anyone else want to speak on this bill? Okay, seeing that, I close the public hearing on House Bill 1566 and open up a work session on 1566A.
Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the A8 amendments dated February 19, 2016 for the purpose of resolving conflicts with the A gross measure. And did I might have said the wrong date, February 19th, 2016.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Springer moves to adopt the Dash 8 amendments dated February 19th, 2016 for the purpose of resolving conflicts with the A engrossed measure. Is there any discussion? Okay. Is there any objection? Okay. Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move that... We move Senate Bill, 1566A to the floor with a due, as amended with a due floor, due pass recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Representative Springer moves Senate Bill 1566A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, Michael, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Moreto?
Aye.
Representative Powell?
Yes.
Representative McClain?
Aye.
Representative Peluso?
Aye.
Representative Reardon?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Chair Doherty?
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes. We do need a carrier, and maybe Representative Parrish would like to carry this. Anyone else on this committee like to co-carry? Okay, thank you very much.
I can.
Oh, yes. Okay, would you like to? How about Parrish and Reardon? Representative Reardon.
So noted.
Okay, with that, I close the work session on 1566A, and I open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1564. Okay, we've got Cindy Hunt and Michael Weilfong. As you're coming up, Richard will read what the bill is.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1564A transfers reporting requirements related to English Language Learner, ELL, programs from school districts to the Department of Education. It adjusts the timelines for making reports, and it requires each school district to make the information that's reported available at the district office on the district website. It declares an emergency effective on passage.
Okay.
Good afternoon. My name is Cindy Hunt, the Government Legal Affairs Manager for the Oregon Department of Education, and with me today is...
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Wolfong. I'm the school finance director and also school facilities.
Okay. To put Senate Bill 1564 into context for you, last session you passed House Bill 3499, which caused a greater level of focus and support to our English language learner kids in Oregon. And that bill did a number of things for English language learners. It directed a comprehensive approach to these kids. It directed the department to do a state ELL plan and roll that out. It also directed a system of supports and progressive interventions for school districts who their student progress indicators, such as graduation rates, do not compare well to other districts in the area of English language learners. But it also directed uniform budget and accounting and reporting, and that's what this bill is about, is the reporting aspects. So the bill also created two stakeholder work groups, and one of those work groups was to focus specifically on uniform budget and accounting and reporting, and many of the recommendations that you see in this bill came from that work group. And Mr. Wiltfong was the administrator for that work group, so he's going to go over some of the details, but I wanted to put the whole bill kind of in that context.
Thanks, Cindy. The work of the work group, where we came away that the proposed changes would do essentially three things. The change of course of responsibility, the responsible reporting, the timing of the data used, as well as displaying the report for public review. With the responsible reporting, as we were looking at it, we realized that a lot of the data that was being asked for was already being submitted to the department. And that's one of the concerns that we have at the agency is when we're asking school districts for new data collections, already they have approximately 84 districts. We try to make sure that we don't already have that data in place because it's very frustrating to them when they have to repeatedly send that data to us in different formats. So we thought, well, we can take the existing data that we can have, we can answer a lot of these questions that are being asked in the bill. The other concern that we have is the consistency of the data being submitted. The sophistication of school districts across the state varies considerably, and our concern there was that we would get good data from, of course, the bigger districts, maybe not such good data from some of our smaller districts. From a consistency standpoint, we thought it would be better if the department pulled its data, because we're going to have to take a look at this data anyway when we do the review to make sure that it's correct, as well as when we prepare our reports to present to the legislature. So a lot of these validations are going to be done already by the agency. The timing of the data, the other big change there was that, as was originally proposed, is that they would use the information, the data that was just right after the school year closed. And if they do that at that point, the data would still be, for the most part, in an estimate basis. What we propose is that we would take a look back to the previous school year in June after the state school fund had been reconciled, and also then that data would be final at that point. And then the third point is to take that information and to compile that into one report listing all the school districts and then post that on the Department of Education's website, either on the school finance pages or somewhere else on the department. That would be available for public review. So those are some of the primary interest in changing the responsibility, as well as making it a little bit easier for school districts to report that information to us.
So. And then the Senate added one amendment, which directed the department to take that report and then send it out and make it available to school districts by September 1 of each year. And we thought that was a good addition because one of the original intents of 3499 was so that districts could see and have the data relating to ELL students be very highlighted for them and also see how they compare to other districts. So we thought that was a good amendment to the bill. And with that, we're open to questions.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Allen, did you want to come up in this panel or we'll have you come up afterwards. Okay, any questions of the ODE folks? Okay, so pretty much this is just what the districts were going to do. You guys could go through and do it.
Yes.
Without them having to. Representative Reardon.
On the second page, lines 30, 31, 32, there's a big bold section there that says, each school district shall provide to the department any information required by the department for the purpose of preparing the report described. Could you elaborate on that just a little bit, the intent of that, what type of information? That just sounds really broad, like, hey, anything we want to know about, this is the avenue to do that. So right. Is that the intent?
Chair Dory, Representative Reardon. I don't know that we'll have to enforce that. I think that that's put there just in case we need to ask additional questions, because with the outcome improvement group, we're still reviewing how we're going to portray this data. And so there may be some other data elements that we may need, but I believe that, in my opinion, the data that we already have with our ALPA and LEP data, I think we can answer a lot of these questions already. But I think this is put in place just in case we need a little bit more. Cindy may be able to add something
to
that.
No, that's correct. We have authority elsewhere to require additional reporting and requirements from districts. So in that way, this is repetitive of that authority. But Michael's correct in that when we're going down the list in the bill, we have every single piece that's in the list. So there may be, you know, some information. What some of the work groups have talked about is perhaps like an individual story to highlight in the report that's, you know, like a best practice or something. That would probably be more voluntary than required, but there's some information like that perhaps. But generally speaking, I don't think this is a section we would be focusing on.
Okay, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So as I understand, as we've looked at this issue a year ago, really what this bill today is doing is taking the onus of the documented report, not the reporting process, the report, putting it on Department of Ed opposed to school districts. Is that correct?
Representative Springer, Chair Daugherty, that is absolutely correct. And the second thing is it doesn't require districts to do a repetitive reporting, a duplicative reporting to us.
Follow up? Yes.
Thank you. So in the reporting process, and thankfully, there's been some changes in ODE in the last few years. I'm really happy about that. A few years ago, I remember when I was on a school board, one of our schools in particular, who was grading by benchmarks, and it was, whether it was a good idea or a bad idea, it was their idea that they had the right to implement. And in the reporting process to ODE, I was actually in the office many times when they were giving the data to ODE, and it was pulling teeth. It was nothing but torture. It was awful. Because ODE wanted the information this way, but the information looked this way, and ODE didn't want it until this looked the way it was supposed to look. Mm-hmm. And that's changed, but on some of the maybe the smaller districts, I don't know, is it a matter of they have a hard time with the data, or is it sometimes a matter of it's not a clear process at ODE on the collection and exactly what the data points are that are being sought after?
Yeah, Chair Daugherty, Representative Springer, I think it's a variety of things, and I'm going to use the example of we've required for a long time Division 22 reporting. It's standards-based, right? And we had a different system for the districts to report that was awkward, is the word I would use. What we did a couple of years ago is a couple of things to address some of the comments coming from districts. I think this will be relevant to your question, which is, you know, first of all, we said to districts, you know, you only have to report on 3 to 5 of these standards every 2 years, so you're not reporting on this bench, you're reporting, you're more narrowly focused. Because I think the first issue you see with small districts, they have limited personnel. And so reporting is, you know, in addition to driving a bus or something, I don't know, you know, it's like just one more thing, right? Whereas with the big district, you tend to have more personnel that's like, this is their job. So that's, you know. And then the second thing we did is we said, okay, we're not going to use this awkward system. We're going to use something called Indistar, which they were already using for continuous improvement plan reporting, and it's something that's easier to report. It's something that they understand. And so, you know, it's kind of a twofold, if not, you know. And then also looking at, we also over the course of, I can think of specific reports that we've eliminated that either, you know, people weren't asking us about, or, you know, that policy issue had been decided, or they're duplicative or what have you. So, you know, we've tried to make an effort to eliminate reports, you know, that just aren't necessary anymore. And then also looking at things like this, where, you know, it's like, well, you know, we could have just gone along and said, okay, departments report to us again, but no, you know, we have all this, so why make them do it? And you'll see that in a second bill, a couple of bills this session, where we're like, no, let's, you know, bring this up to another level and see how we can do this without having districts once again, you know, have to expend personnel hours and
brief
so follow. Forth.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, and this really doesn't even need to solicit a response. It's just a parting comment. I hope, and I've seen the results of some of those decisions at ODE, and I appreciate that on behalf of school districts. I would hope that we would continue to refine that process, not just eliminate data or eliminate reports, but continue to strive for a very clear, definitive way to gather that data and exactly what that data is. How you ask the question is oftentimes more important than the answer. And so I would just encourage the department to continue. I have never talked to a superintendent, and I've talked to tons of them, who say, we don't want to be bothered by ODE and we don't want to give up our data. I have heard universally, they want all this data and we don't even know how to do it, or it doesn't fit, or it's this struggle. I don't see districts hiding. I see districts saying, oh my gosh, I have to jump through their hoops to give them what they want. Mm-hmm. And that just doesn't make sense. So I encourage you to continue on that process, and I appreciate the progress that has been made.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative
Representative Springer said it very well. I'm okay.
Thank you.
Because it is smaller districts, the superintendent is doing all of that. Yes. And with the other districts, you've got departments. So I believe we appreciate that. Okay, any other questions of this panel? Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Morgan Allen and Parisa. Sean Ronnie. Did I get it right? After three times? I have another 2 weeks to perfect it. So.
No worries. Good afternoon, Chair Doherty and members of the House Education Committee. For the record, my name is Parisa Chanrami, representing Stanford Children, as well as the English Language Learners Advocates Coalition. We've also submitted a letter in support of Senate Bill 1564A, and I'm here to speak about our support as well. We believe that this bill is very practical. It streamlines the reporting process. It also makes sure, as Cindy and Michael had mentioned earlier, make sure that the data are validated, as well as ensuring that the reporting is consistent and that it's all in one place online. After the reports are finalized, we also appreciate how the department will share these reports back with school districts by September 1st. We think that this is a very unique opportunity for community leaders, parents, as well as school board members to come together to talk about how well are we doing in terms of serving our English language learners. And we really appreciate the level of collaboration around this bill as well as the amendment. And with that, I'll end my testimony and thank you again for your time.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. Morgan Allen on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association. I appreciate the discussion and the questions and comments from the committee members today. I think I'll just be very brief that this is a very rare creature indeed. It's a bill that saves districts and ODE staff time. It will make data easier to access at both the state and district level for anybody that's interested. And you had wonderful collaboration between a state agency, education groups, and community-based organizations. Mm-hmm. So we have seen that along this ELL road that we've gone down, and hopefully we can replicate that in more areas in the future. So we would urge your support of the bill.
Okay, so it sounds like there was a kumbaya moment there.
Let's move the bill.
Okay, any questions of this panel? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, anybody else like to speak on Senate Bill 1564? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on 1564 and open up work session. Chair Doherty,
okay,
I move. I'll open up work session on 1564A.
Madam Chair, I move that Senate Bill 1564A to the floor with a due pass recommendation, with the A engrossed measure and due pass recommendation.
Okay. Chair Springer moves Senate Bill 1564A to the floor with a due pass the A engrossed measure recommendation. Is there any discussion? There's an awkward sentence.
Yes, it is.
Okay, seeing none, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none. Michael, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Hack?
Yes.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Peluso?
Aye.
Representative Reardon?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Representative Barreto?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Chair Doherty?
Aye.
Okay, with that, the measure passes. We do need a carrier. Anyone?
I'll carry.
Okay, we'll have Representative Springer carry the bill. Okay, with that, I close the work session. No, this. Yeah, the work session on Senate Bill 1564A, and I open up an informational hearing on the topic that we have on STEM. I couldn't find. Flummox there for a moment.
I previewed this morning
To
make sure that it was safe for everybody involved.
Yes, thank you.
Excellent.
Yes, I gave permission for Representative Reardon to leave because he's a very fast learner, and so he doesn't need to hear it twice.
Lots of questions.
Contrary to what you are, a fast learner, Representative Reardon. Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen. Thanks for joining us.
So we're slow.
Thank you.
Pardon? We're slow.
He's slow, no.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, members of the House Education Committee, for the opportunity to transition you from expeditious lawmaking into a report, which we are required to do annually with the legislative body on the work of the STEM Investment Council, which, as topics are concerned, fits within the broader work of the state around providing career technical education and STEM learning opportunities for students in our K-12 and higher education system, and our broader work around.
And we all know who you are, but the record does not.
I deeply apologize to the committee and ask your forgiveness. For the record, my name is Lindsay Capps. I am the acting chief education officer and education policy advisor to Governor Kate Brown.
Okay, thank you.
And thank you again for the opportunity to be here today. As I was saying, this what we will report on today fits in within a larger framework of career technical education and STEM education and providing opportunities for students within our K-12 system and our higher education system, as well as our broader workforce and youth development strategies in the state. So this is a sliver of the work, but part of a much larger whole. And I'm honored to be here today with Jim Pyro, who is chair of the STEM Investment Council, which is a public body that advises this work, as well as Mark Lewis, who is the policy director for STEM education within the Chief Education Office. Let me begin by providing, I think, some context to this conversation beyond the sort of general topic area, and that's really around our overall statewide goals for education. And I think the governor shares with many of you here, if not all of you, that we need to do more to improve high school graduation, and in particular, ensure that students graduate high school with a plan for their future, really knowing and having a sense of what they want to do next, whether that's going directly into a career, whether that's pursuing a post-secondary certificate or pursuing a college or advanced degree. That's really what I think grounds the work that we're talking about today. We also know that in meeting that objective, we need students to feel empowered and engaged in their learning and to see a real connection between their education and their future. Governor Brown believes that we can do more at the state level and working in partnership with local school districts to provide learning opportunities that motivate, inspire, and connect students with real-world application. And working from classrooms and into communities through partnerships, through the work of our educators and schools, we can do a lot to foster opportunities to really create powerful creative thinkers, doers, innovators, and contributors to our society and the benefit of our state and communities across the state. So let me talk specifically about how this fits into the work around STEM and CTE. Obviously, this is a critical place where we can connect education with careers and create opportunities, as we talked about, to engage students and connect them with real-world application. And I think it's important for us to remember that CT and STEM don't just sort of sit off within the learning environment as something separate or as an elective or as an add-on, but we're really talking about a way of developing essential skills and hands-on learning that are vital for students to thrive in school and to thrive
in their future, especially in a very dynamic and ever-changing global economy. And it is a way that we can promote critical thinking, persistence, problem-solving, and creativity. The challenge that we have is that we don't have equitable access across the state to these learning opportunities, whether that's in our rural communities, whether that's within our traditionally underserved communities. Many of you could probably speak to that within your own legislative districts and school districts that that your constituents send their students to. So we need to do more to connect these opportunities to schools, and we can leverage regional partnerships to do that, and in the process, create really a pathway for students into high-wage, high-demand careers that we know are really critical to our state's economic future. The good news is that you all, as a legislative body, did great work in the 2015 session along with the governor in passing House Bill 3072. You see the graphic here on the screen, which really talks about how both career technical education and science, technology, engineering, and math education are really integrated. And we're trying to model that at the state level through the work of the STEM Investment Council, through the Career Technical Education Revitalization Grant Advisory Committee, through the Talent Council, these bodies that are really bringing separate strategies together into a unified approach. As we look at the STEM Investment Council in particular, it serves a role in advising the Chief Education Officer in strategies to promote STEM education, and also as the Chief Education Officer serves as a convening position of other agencies from cradle to career to help integrate that work across those agencies. And we've worked in very close partnership with both the Oregon Department of Education and the Higher Education Coordinating Commission in thinking through this work going forward. And obviously through House Bill 3072, we have an integrated policy framework to help move this work forward and build a foundation for more students to access this kind of connected learning in the future. Next slide. Thank you. Here is the directive that you all gave us through House Bill 2636, and more specifically the council that Mr. Pyro chairs. You can see the outcomes that we have been charged with achieving as a state, in which the council itself plays a role in making recommendations not only in strategy and policy, but in investments. It's the STEM Council is comprised of public members, private sector leaders, and we are working to broaden its advisory capacity to include educators, school leaders, and other community partners, which also are involved in some of the subcommittees of the council. With its establishment, these are the outcomes that we're looking at, both the K-12 student learning outcomes that are critical at fourth and eighth grade, doubling the number of students that are proficient at those grade levels, as well as thinking about at the post-secondary level the kinds of degrees we want to see students completing and increasing that degree completion with a connection, obviously, between both systems. But we also need to be cognizant of the fact that it isn't just about the outcomes. We also need to be thinking about the inputs that will help expand these types of opportunities to more schools and students, as well as thinking about the broader benefits that this type of learning can help produce, not only for individuals, but for our state's economic goals. So with that, I'd like to go ahead and cut short my comments to allow the chair of the council to give you his formal report. But again, just want to thank the committee for the opportunity in the midst of this busy session to come and report to you on the work that is ongoing.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, my name is Jim Pyron, President and CEO of Portland General Electric, and I serve as chair of the STEM Investment Council. Okay. And I'd like to give you my report on the progress we've made to date and give you a sense of what we've accomplished and some of the challenges we have ahead. On this page, just to put it in perspective, and as business leaders, we are always concerned about performance. The numbers we have in this area are fairly challenging when you look at where we are today. In terms of math and science, on the proficiency level, on the math side, at fourth and eighth grade, the numbers at or above proficiency are 37%, and in eighth grade, 33%. And in science, it's 34% in science at the fourth grade level and 35% at the eighth grade level. These are very low numbers in terms of proficiency. And even more so, and one big concern for the STEM Investment Council is the equity lens that you put on this. When you look at the numbers, African Americans score 26% lower than whites. Hispanics score 18% lower, and lower income socioeconomic children score 20% lower. So as we've embarked on this work, we've had a real focus on the equity side of this and the need to improve performance at all levels, but primarily in the areas of equity also. If you go to the next slide, this really shows the opportunity. STEM jobs pay well. They provide solid incomes across all ranges of educational attainment. And so you can see here the difference in attainment and those STEM jobs versus non-STEM jobs. These are higher lifetime earnings of over 25% on average. Obviously, these are family wage jobs, and obviously these kinds of people can reduce their dependence on social services. You know, STEM workers drive the economic growth and are a key to our thriving economy. This is another piece of data that we came across in our work as we learned of the challenges we have in Oregon. This slide shows the graduation rates in the final post-secondary level for STEM degrees. And the numbers here show that after 5 years with this one cohort, that only 2% of our high school students entering high school graduated with a STEM degree. The national average is close to 4%, and so that represents a significant gap in where we are. When you look at the numbers here, in this one cohort, roughly 1,000 children ended up with a STEM degree, but the demand in the market is much, much larger. We looked at one study where over the next 10 years, 70,000 jobs in the STEM fields are required, about 7,000 a year, half for new and another half for replacement. Another study we ran across showed that over 40,000 jobs would be required in the STEM fields in 2020. The unfortunate thing is that Oregonians are not filling those jobs, and industries are going outside of Oregon to fill those jobs, or sometimes those jobs go unfilled. So what is the STEM Investment Council doing about it? We broke up into three subcommittees to really kind of break the work down and really start building up our plans. We created three subcommittees, one on strategic planning, one on data metrics, and one on communication and advocacy, because many parents don't understand the opportunities that exist in the STEM fields. In the strategic planning area, we completed our strategic plan. We released that at the Oregon Business Summit. It was out there for comment. We're going to continue gathering comments on the plan. We'd like to finalize that in May and release it at STEM Week in May, which I think is around May 7th. In the area of data metrics, a lot of work's gone into defining what are STEM jobs. We've been relying on the Brookings Report, which says that approximately 20% of all jobs are STEM, require some high level of proficiency in one or more STEM fields. That represents about 26 million people across the U.S. So that's a significant opportunity. Jobs are more and more requiring STEM, and if you go way, way back, that was more like a 10% number. But it has migrated, and we see that continuing to migrate as the need for STEM skills are required to be successful in the new economy. And finally, in the area of communication advocacy, we're trying to figure out how to get our message out to parents who don't know the opportunities in STEM fields and the chance for their children to be successful and have high-wage, high-demand jobs. In terms of the vision in our strategic plan, and you can find this, I don't know if we provided this, and we can provide it if you're interested, but it's out on the website if you want to do a search for the Oregon STEM plan. But the vision we had, and I want to read this because this isn't complete, and it kind of leaves it short in terms of what we came up as a vision for our council and for our state. So it says, build an inclusive, sustainable, innovative-based economy by reimagining and transforming how we educate and empower individuals and communities. Oregonians of all races, economic status, and locations will develop the fundamental STEM-enabled innovation skills and mindset necessary to, one, fully contribute to an increasingly complex and technologically rich global society, two, address high demand, workforce, and industry needs, third, improve the prosperity of all individuals and communities across the state, and four, become creative lifelong learners who can adapt to changing social and economic conditions. So that was the vision we set forth for the council and for the state in the area of STEM. These goals here represent the high-level goals. Underneath those goals are various strategies and outcomes that we'd like to achieve. I would point your attention to the second one, ensuring equitable opportunities and access. As I mentioned earlier, the data reflects that we are not being successful of our children of color and of poverty. We really need to focus in that area to really give them an opportunity to succeed. And obviously the fourth one, this is going to take some time. This is not something we can cure overnight. This is a system that has to change in terms of how we educate our children, and it is going to take some time, and we're working on that. The next slide really talks about outcomes and metrics. We have lined out the progression of children through the educational system and trying to identify those things we need to measure that will give us an indication that we're on the right path. Much work is being done in this area, and we have more work to do to get those metrics defined. We will collect those metrics by equity so that we can identify where those challenges are and whether we're making success. Many of the metrics here will have an equity lens on them so we can identify and see if we're changing the outcomes. So how are we going to do that? We started with the STEM hubs. And for those who don't know what a STEM hub is, it's a collaborative partnership. It's a geographically centered organization. It brings together various partners in the community, both the educators, the workforce boards, the economic development professionals, post-secondary, out-of-school programs, and our business industry and other civic leaders together to talk about the outcomes they want for their region in terms of STEM and CTE. It's really that collaboration and partnership that we're trying to foster so that each region can determine what they need in their area to grow their economy. We've seen some real good successes. Six hubs were funded in the first session, which I'll talk about in a second. They're coming together, they're working collaboratively, and they're leveraging resources beyond what we are giving them to help their organization. It is also a way to share best practices across the state and connect people in various fields on what's working and what's not working. Let's go into the next slide. This slide really just represents the six hubs that were funded. There were a number of other hubs that were being developed, but they weren't ready to get funding. They needed more work to do on building that collaborative network. The Department of Education has been fantastic in supporting this effort. We still have more work to do on continuing to connect these organizations, but we've made really good progress to date. In the last legislative session, there were dollars dedicated to various tracks that were to continue our work. The STEM hubs got an additional funding level to move us up to $5 million to allow us to increase the number of hubs. That was very encouraging for the existing hubs, but for the new hubs that didn't kind of make the cut the first time. We did complete that work, and you'll see a slide later that shows we now have moved to 11 hubs, and they're all very excited to continue that work, and we will bring those hubs together to, again, share best practices, what's working, and really build a community within the hubs of what is working and how to continue to grow their influence in their geographical areas. In the area of the STEM innovation grants, again, a lot of kudos to the Oregon Department of Education and Laura Roach, who's been running this program. But we have a number of grants out there in various stages. We are starting to make those grants. I saw today that Benson received a grant on the math in real life. And so those grants are getting out there, and that's exciting. This is a chance to really identify programs that can make a difference that we can grow and replicate across the system. So we're really excited about this work. We're going to track metrics in these areas and also outcomes to see if they're getting the kind of results we want and ensuring that these programs can be upscaled to give more people opportunities to employ these techniques that can provide better outcomes. And finally, in the area of post-secondary success, $2 million is moved to the HEC so that they can really continue to support recruitment and retention for children of color and poverty that are struggling at the college level to ensure that they stay in school and stay committed to those professions. So that's really our report. We feel really good about the progress we've made. We have much more work to do. We're excited about the innovation grants out there. We're excited about the hubs coming together. We're trying to use those hubs as the conveyance of information and connecting them to the innovation grants. So the work is beginning. We have a long journey ahead of us. The challenge in my mind from my perspective is converting the way we think about how we teach children. And I'm not an educator. I'm an engineer. But that is one of the biggest challenges, because education, the way it's been done historically, is not the way children are best able to learn. It's that real-life action applied learning that's going to make a difference. And that's a combination of both CT and STEM. Those are very closely connected. But it's really bringing those experiences to kids to make their educational experience relevant to them and where they can see a career long term. So with that, I will conclude my remarks. And if you have questions, Mark or I or Lindsay can answer them.
Mark, were you going to present, or are you here for questions?
He's got all the information.
Oh, he's the go-to guy. Yeah.
Okay. Mark has just been outstanding in supporting the committee and really helping us see through this, many of the issues that we've been working for.
Okay,
I really appreciate
you.
Mark's support.
Okay, Mark, since you are up there, if you could say your name for the record, so you're all legal.
Thank you, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark Lewis. I am the Policy Director for STEM at the Chief Education Office.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Representative McLean.
Well, first of all, it sounds like you've done an extraordinary amount of work and that it's really building and really developing well. But I just can't go without saying that it's really important to me, and I think that Representative Springer has said this many times and others, that when you start talking about the goals that you have and the skills that you're looking for, and you don't have the A in your title, it's just STEM, it's not STEAM, I think that's really, really, really not going to work. And I think you've got to see a relationship between those important math skills and science skills and some of the other skills that you need to help with things like that. I just want to give an example. And I was thinking back about this engineer student that graduated from Oregon State University, and she was a speech and debate student for 4 years, and she beat out 300 other engineers for her first job. And the reason she did that was because of her critical thinking, because of her communication skills, her ability to work with teams, and her ability to assess what the interview was going to be looking like and what kinds of questions they would be asking and what would she answer when they asked them. And they assessed that about the same way when she asked, "I may look for another job someday. You gave me this job. Why did I get it?" And some of those skills that you want, and you have a how on the bottom of your report that talks about how you're going to get to where you want to go. And one of them was hands-on experience and hands-on types of out-of-school activities that really relate to careers. And that's what your band's all about, and that's what your drama's all about, and that's what your debate's all about. That's what robotics is all about. It's what marketing's all about, and DECA, and those types of things that are there ready for you to, you know, support them and help them be part of your process and your thinking and your program. And I'm quite sure that I'm not the first person to say that to you. And I'm quite sure that you've thought about it and how you're going to try and connect it, but I can't say it enough, because you're talking about a whole human being, a whole student that's got to reflect and react to a lot of different types of information needs and educational needs. And it's not just science and math. It's science and math along with some of the other items. And one of the things that this guy said to her was, you know what, you're going to be able to take that engineering that you've used and you're going to be able to share it with your team. Mm-hmm. And so I just don't want us to forget that.
Thank you. And Representative McLean, what did you teach for 42 years?
Oh, just debate. Drama.
Thank you. Chair Doherty, Representative McLean, and as the son of an art teacher, thank you for raising the arts. I would just, in response, just two quick responses. One, just to honor your comment. Mm-hmm. I'll preview Monday, because I think the Deputy Superintendent and I will be back here mm-hmm. talking a little bit about the Every Student Succeeds Act. And one of the pieces of that is some direction from the federal government as the state develops a plan under the new federal education law mm-hmm. to look at STEAM, and so looking at arts and creative design as a component of that, and that's probably something that we'll, the state will be looking at and sort of how we comply with those those components. The second piece is I would not want the impression to be left that we aren't also talking as a state about a well-rounded curriculum, of which this is a very important piece.
Yeah.
So I just want to put that on the record. But Mark, I don't know if you want to respond further just with respect to STEAM. And
sure. And, thank you very much. Representative McLean, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. This is, I appreciate your comment. It comes up an awful lot, having worked in this space for several years. Many of our hubs brand themselves as STEAM hubs. There's a great deal of recognition across all of the STEM conversations of the critical nature of design thinking, of creativity, critical thinking, problem solving, all of those essential, what we think about essential skills that are developed not only in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, but also in other realms as well. My son, being a junior at Cleveland High School in Portland Public, is one of the co-captains of the speech and debate team and very successful. Thank you for your service. I think we could consider you know, expanding those programs through many more schools in the state as a benefit as well. So I think that it is very important that we don't get into an acronym war here. I think that we, when we talk about the value of that design thinking and that creativity and that problem solving, if we talk about the skills necessary to succeed in a rapidly changing, increasingly complex global society, then we're talking about very, very similar things. So I think that there's a lot of common ground there. And if you'll look at that Venn diagram again, the outcomes that we are aiming for are those thinkers, dreamers, and doers of tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Representative Frederick, then Representative Wilson.
Thank you. I'm going to, thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a number of things that I wanted to say, but one of the things is include it in those, in that slide. Include the art program specifically in your program. When you give a presentation on STEM, please place it in there. Otherwise, it appears as though it's a separate situation. So I would encourage you to please do that. As a former molecular biologist who has a degree in theater, you know, I look at this and go, okay, let's where would I fit in this? I would not necessarily. And I will say that because it appears as though there was a this is the other concern that I have. I'm interested in kids having jobs. But I'm interested in them being citizens and being adults. And since I don't know what those jobs will be, it seems a little bit too much for me to say, let's just make sure that we're going for a job. The STEM fields, I find the STEM fields to be really based primarily around curiosity. And so if we are going to encourage, if we're going to be working on this, let's look at it in terms of curiosity. I would encourage us to look at it in terms of curiosity. I want to see kids proficient. When you say proficient in science, one of the problems I've run into most of my life is that people believe that because of the way they were taught science, that it was just simply a listing of definitions, when instead it's a process and it's experiential. And that experiential learning is something that, again, needs to be placed as a basic part, in my view, of what we're after here. We are having that as that's a concern. I've seen math teachers want to teach math in the way that they were taught math, and if you don't succeed in the way that they were taught math, then you have no understanding of math. And then they suddenly find themselves with a kid talking about chaos theory, and they're completely blown away. They have no idea what they're talking about, but that's what we need to have that kind of information about. Let me go to one other thing. There's a constant concern and the phrasing regarding equity and not reaching children in poverty. In my experience, especially in Portland over the last few years, the kids in poverty were not getting science. They were getting two hours of learning, getting ready to take a math test or a literature test. And if you want to encourage someone to be joyous about what they're learning, then you can't do that with trying to hit them over the head basically and get them as bored as possible. So as we look at the whole STEM and STEAM approach, I would encourage you to recognize that we're spending an awful lot of time with kids doing rote memory efforts and other things that are simply not interesting. I got in trouble because my mind was off playing with other things, looking out the window and other things, but I did pretty well because I could basically fake it with some of the things that they needed to have done officially. But I would really encourage us to look at what are those kids actually getting and how are you keeping them interested? Because I'm not at all surprised that we have 900 out of, 30,000 taking the test, 900 going into STEM fields. By that time, they've been so bored out of that they, why would they go into that? Please take a look at it, and I would just encourage you to beef that up as much as possible.
Chair Doherty, Representative Frederick, I couldn't agree with you more. I would just read a couple beliefs from our strategic plan that just to show you that we have reflected that. The first belief was all people have creative potential. Our students should not be consumers of knowledge. They need to be creators of it in a way that unleashes their creative genius, interests, and talents. And then the other one, I'm trying to think where it was on curiosity. Here it is, number four. Engage learners succeed. How we teach our students is as important as what we teach them. We must create meaningful learning experiences that empower all students to embrace their curiosity, take ownership of, and joy in their learnings, and become lifelong learners.
I appreciate that. Put it at the top.
Yep, I agree.
As a microbiologist actor.
As a microbiologist actor.
Thank you so much for your comments.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How would you describe the differences or the disadvantages that a STEM center, say in Southern Oregon, would have as compared to one in the urban parts of Oregon?
Representative Wilson, Chair Doherty, members of the committee, I think there's a great deal of diversity, both in terms of diversity in terms of the constraints and challenges in various regions across the state, as well as diversity of assets that people can draw upon. Many of our more rural communities do not necessarily have large industry present there where they can work closely with a great deal of number of employers. And yet they also have a great deal of natural resources and other assets that they can bring to bear that are perhaps inaccessible to those in more urban settings. So in each of the situations, what we're asking our regions to do is to take a look at those assets and not the assets simply from an economic and a financial perspective, which is a lot of time the conversation gets to that kind of transactional. We don't have an Intel who can give us money to support blah, blah, blah. But when they start looking at the assets that they have in terms of the solidarity of their community, the outreach, their deep connection with parents, their natural resource areas, Coos Curry, for example, and looking at some of the natural wildlife and resources that are accessible to students there, those communities are actually doing phenomenal work in recognition of that. I think the economic challenges that are very diverse across the state is also one of those reasons why we're asking the communities to do their own regional definition because of community identity and to take a look at the assets that they can bring to bear and engage all aspects of their community around what are their common goals, whether that's a focus on early learning, whether it's a focus on transitions to post-secondary situations. It really is very much dependent on the local community itself.
I could have just one follow-up. Thank you. When it comes to a STEM hub, how does a parent find out what kind of or what level of STEM activity is happening within that hub area?
Representative Wilson, member of this community, great question. One of the things that we're working with the STEM hubs on is to try to help them frame some common messaging to engage their local media, to draw attention to the phenomenal things that are happening in the education system. We have some amazing educators across this state who are doing just incredible work to engage students and inspire them for their futures. Largely, they're working in isolation. And so part of the reason, one of the basic tenets around this sort of statewide network is to accelerate the flow of information and ideas across that and to break down that isolation, breaking it down at a local level where we're connecting communities and classroom, and breaking it down at a regional level where we're connecting educators to each other and to the business and industries in their region, and then connecting across the state as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
Just one thing I wanted to mention, if you don't mind. You, Representative Wilson, one of the there are a number of science teachers and humanities teachers, because I'm not sure how you're fitting that in there. It needs to be
That's
there.
That's the STEAM.
That, well, STEAM. But it's a comprehensive education. There are some incredible folks in Coos County, and have been for decades, and also in Lake County. And I remember running into some of these teachers, and they managed to bring in the history of what goes on in Coos County and how that is affected. How that's affected the biology in the community. It's really, and the politics. I mean, you know, one of the reasons we have the open beaches is because of the politics. But it also had to do with what was going on with the science and the research going on down there. So we need to. The comprehensive education is what we're after. As we want to try to isolate it in terms of STEM, I think that's a mistake. STEAM, let's make sure that we're getting everybody in there. We don't know what these kids are going to be doing.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How does, I have a constituent who's very interested in STEM, STEAM, just the whole entire concept. So, and this particular constituent has been involved in this kind of education down in California and has moved up to my area and really wants to know how he can become involved. I mean, who does he get in touch with? Does he get in touch with the school district to find out more about what the STEM hubs are doing in his geography? How exactly does a citizen interface who's very enthusiastic and wants to have some input into it all?
Yes, thank you, Representative Wilson. We'll be posting on our website the contact information for each of the STEM Hub leaders in the regions. Can always, of course, email me. I know that's a backwards sort of a solution, but it's an immediate one right now, and I'll make sure that he is connected to the right people. But we need to do a better job of publicizing this and elevating the work that these hubs are doing, and that's certainly very much on our agenda. The hubs themselves want to do that as well, and oftentimes they're not media specialists. And one of the things that we are working on is a communications architecture, as Chair Pyro had said, and we're going to be working with the hubs to help elevate their skills in being able to reach out to their communities more broadly.
Thank you.
But we know that's a missing piece. Okay. Absolutely.
That was communication was one of your four.
Communication is one of them.
Yeah. Hey, any other questions? Okay, if not, thank you very much, gentlemen. And I close the informational hearing on STEM STEAM. Okay, next week, you don't have to work over the weekend for education. Do you have a question?
After.
Okay. On Monday, we're going to have informational hearings. Congresswoman Bonamici was going to be here, but I'm not quite sure how the floor was going to go, and she had to leave at 2 to go back to Washington. So she may not be here, but we've got Dr. Noor and Lindsay back again to talk about ESSA. And then also we have an informational hearing Monday the 29th from the REAP kids that were here earlier last session. Okay? So anything else for the good of the order? Okay, with that, I adjourn House Committee. The good of the order? Okay, with that, I adjourn House Committee.